And we are live just a few moments early. Go ahead and get on the road, so to say, with it. And get on the road is a good term to use today, because for those that are new to the show, and that could be even been around 10 years, you're relatively new compared to some of the OGs of the TSPC universe. The show began on the road. I used to get on every day, and I'm coming to you from my personal mobile studio, the 2005 Jetta Diesel TDI. I bet you some of you didn't even think I could do that anymore or remember it. But the old man brain is not that far gone. That was all the way back in 2008. And so half of 2008, June of 2008 through all of 2009, this show was done on the road. And in the early days, as we started a show called, of all things, the Survival Podcast, about preparedness, self-sufficiency, self-reliance, independence, and liberty, the four pillars of the podcast. I frequently at that time told the story of the ant and the grasshopper, sometimes a little bit longer story, sometimes just a quick reference, 30 seconds to it. But we told that story a lot. And today's show, the show will change a little bit than from how it originally was, but I pulled the bullet points and then modified them a bit to, you know, modernize and what have you, from a show that was done in October of 2009. So the original version of this was done audio only on the road into a little MP3 recorder during the foundational days of the Survival Podcast. It was also part of a kind of a downhill run to freedom for me. By October of 2009, I had built this in a little more than a year into well more than sufficient to leave my old life behind forever. I'd actually done it straight up at 1 year. In June of 2009, I went to my partner at the time, Neil Franklin. I offered to sell out everything that I had as far as equity in the company's behalf, and said I wanted to go do my own thing. And he asked me to do him a favor. And he had been a very good partner and had been very good to me for about 6 years of working together. And so he asked me to take over one of his companies for 6 more months till the end of the year. And that's what I was doing when I originally did this show. I was basically rebuilding one of his corporations for him and on my way out the door at the same time. And so it's just a fun little trip back in time for me to think about that. It's so long ago. And part of it also feels like it was yesterday. Remember the old saying, the days are long, but the years are short. So we'll be going back in time today, back to the roots. But this show is not just for like brand new people who have never been through any of this stuff with me before. It also makes me think of like when I was in sports as a kid, no matter how far advanced you got, no matter how good you thought you were, you have one bad game. You have one bad quarter, one bad period, one bad set of plays. Guess what you were doing Monday morning? Men were going back to the fundamentals. And there's a reason for that. Even if you don't have a bad game or a bad day, it's never bad to go back to the fundamentals. In some martial arts, they'll say things like, there are no black belt katas, or there are no black belt moves. There are only white belt moves and katas done at a black belt level. And it's that mindset that we're coming at today. And I guarantee you, many of you have been with me since the Genesis, you OGs. You will have many of these things really crossed off and done well. And then there's going to be somebody like, oh, yeah, man, I need to do that. Or, yeah, I did that 9 years ago, and I don't know what happened after that. I need to go check on that, because I'm going to give you 20 steps today, 20 things that you can do that will not get you ready for the zombies to rise and the sun to crash into the earth and dogs and cats to have puppy kittens that rain down from the sky. But they will get you prepared for 90% of what happens, and it will be some of the things that everybody can do. Nothing here today requires you being a millionaire. Nothing requires you being independently wealthy. Nothing requires you living way out in the middle of Jibip. Nothing requires a bomb shelter. Anybody who is a functional adult who is self-reliant enough to take care of themselves and pay their own bills can do this freaking stuff, and 99% will not. And that's why you see so many miserable people when disasters occur that are bad, but they're not earth-ending disasters. They're just big disruptions. With that in mind, before we get into it, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor today, number one today, is Above Phone, where you can rise above with the best privacy phones, laptops, and tablets. Guys, if you have any questions about Above Phone, tomorrow you're going to want to tune in. Hakeem Anwar, who is the founder of Above Phone, will be on. We'll be talking about how to protect your privacy using Above Phone products and services, but not just that. Other techniques you can use to defend your privacy. But if you want the easy button, these are the easy buttons right here. The phones, the laptops, the tablets, all of it. The data-only SIM product, we'll be talking about that tomorrow too. This is a great way to take back your privacy with Above Phone. You know, right now, your devices spy on you, your app makers spy on you, your ISP spies on you, and your carrier spies on you. Who the hell doesn't spy on you? Pretty much no one except Above Phone. And they also make it harder for other people to do that as well. Check them out today at AbovePhone.com. Remember, if you're an MSB member, you get... yep, how much? $75 off any phone at AbovePhone.com. Next up today, K9Academy.us. That's Joel Ryle's company, where you can learn to train your dogs. Joel will train you, and you train the doggo. That's the way it goes. K9 Academy is the quick, direct way to learn the secrets of an industry pro. Joel has been training dogs for over, I think, like 2 decades now. The man has traveled all over the place. He has endured hell to learn how to train the best production dogs on the planet. However, that means that when it comes to things like basic core obedience or training a bird dog or training anything that isn't all the way to that level, all those things go into it. It's that core canine obedience is the place that you always want to start no matter what it is you're looking for from a dog. Good citizen on the homestead, livestock guardian dog, hunting dog, protection dog, maybe not a full-on protection dog, but a dog that knows his job, perimeter defense, etc. All of that starts with core obedience. You can learn all of that and more and go to really advanced levels if you want to as well at canineacademy.us. Again, Joel Riles, who is also a member of the Expert Council and has been just a great friend to the show and to Dorothy and I. He and his wife, Wendy, are close personal friends of ours. I'm really looking forward to seeing Joel very, very soon. Joel also has right now going on the other side, on the Fortress Canine side, a sale on puppies. I'm waiting him to get me some pictures to go with a blog post he sent me today. That'll go out tomorrow, and you guys can find out about it. I mean, Joel just doesn't put his dogs on sale, so just know that that's coming. Some amazing dogs. Our dog, Belle, is a Fortress Canine. She's a wonderful, wonderful dog. And I couldn't be happier with her. All right, so with that, let's get on into it. Thanks for the super chat, T River Rat. I will answer that for you later today toward the end of the show. If you guys want to ask me questions during this, remember the best thing to do is put question in all caps at the beginning of the question. If I see it, and when I'm by myself, that's debatable. But if I see it, I'll start and answer it at the end. But I also promise you that if you do it, T River Rat didn't slip me even a $1 super chat, it automatically stars it. If I could set StreamYard, like see Second Light Organic, I didn't even read it yet, but he has the word comment in all caps, so I've starred that one. If I could set it so it would recognize that and just auto start, if anybody's listening from StreamYard, that'd be an awesome feature you guys could do for us. Some way that when people are asking a question, it would auto star. That would be great. But the only one that does it right now of all the destinations we stream to is YouTube with the Super Chats auto star. So I'm not extorting you, but if you want to throw me a few bucks, it'll guarantee that you get your question or comment answered. You get recognized on the air. All right. So let's start off with this whole concept of grasshopper in the air. When I started this show, I was under no misgivings of what I was doing. I knew exactly why I was doing what I was doing, exactly how it would work out and what it would become. That I could know, because when you're creating something that's going to have its own legs, its own life, its own development, almost like creating a biological life form, a community of communities, you can't really know what it's going to become. The community that's built around workshops and events alone, like, you know, I could never have foreseen people that were that strongly bonded and that big on helping each other. But I knew what I was doing. I knew I was creating a new business, and I knew I was creating a way to reach people about something that was very important to me, which was overall preparedness. But the real word for it, the way that I teach it, is lifestyle design. things like stored food, extra cash, all the things that preppers do are just a component of lifestyle design. If you have a design for a system with no redundancy built into the system and no accountant for failures that will come from the system, you don't have a system. You know the old saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans? That comes from people that don't have redundancy built into their systems. When you have redundancy built into your system, even when something goes wrong, it's not a long track back on, where when you have no redundancy built into your system, one little life event doesn't seem little to you, but when you look at it, the macrocosm of the world, a tiny little mouse part event could destroy your life. And so I've always believed in building wealth, but I've also always believed in growing wealth and also expanding wealth, right? But preserving it at the same time. And I've taken that throughout my whole life. I've put it into everything. Your home, your business, you know, your lifestyle, all of it should have systems of redundancy. Two is one and one is none. Three is for me and four is more, right? Have those redundancies built in. I come from a mechanical background and a telecommunications networking background. Those are the additional things that teach you about redundancy. Most vehicles have no redundancy. Like, redundancy in most vehicles is like a jumper cable set and a spare tire. Like, there's not a fail safe in the system that if the fuel line fails, there's a redundant fuel line. Like, that's not something that's in most vehicles, right? That would be difficult to do. But in computer networks, you don't just see how great it would be if you had redundancy. You could actually build redundancy. You know, we built loop networks, for instance, that if one node failed, they just reroute and, you know, only one node goes down instead of the whole network. Or in some instances, basically, even the node that failed can still be operational from any access point into it. So that was the mindset I was coming at. And as I was doing that, I'm like, how do I reach people? How do I reach people at the most basic level that this stuff's worth talking about? And I always thought, like, the best way to convey ideas to people, to get people to listen to you, to get people to resonate with you, to get people to adopt ideas and ideologies that they otherwise are not interested in is through storytelling. And that became really obvious then. What was the best story about preparedness that I could come up with that everybody was already a little bit familiar with? Of course, I'm speaking of the ant and the grasshopper, with today's show being called The Journey from Grasshopper to Ant. And the beautiful thing about this story was I didn't have to invent anything about the story or about my original hearing of the story. See, my old Ukrainian grandpa, the coal mining grandpa, the guy that lived in rural Pennsylvania, the guy that taught me about gardening and fishing and hunting and guns and gave me advice for my white-tailed deer hunting, that guy. Yeah, he used to tell me stories when I was a little kid, and I mean a little kid, right? Like barely out of diapers kid, barely old enough to pay attention kid. I used to go spend summers with him. Eventually, I ended up living near him. But in the summers when I was that little kid, on the weekends, he would sit outside with his AM radio on his glider, and that's basically like an outdoor couch that instead of rocks slides back and forth. And he'd sit there, and I'd sit next to him, and he'd tell me all about all kinds of things. The old country, he'd tell me about the gardens, he'd tell me about when he was in the military, but he would also tell me stories while that god-awful polka music blared out of that little AM radio. And one of the stories he told me almost every weekend was the grasshopper and the ant, because I would ask questions like, why do we grow a garden? Isn't there food at the store? He would tell me the story of the ant and the grasshopper. So I started telling the story of the ant and the grasshopper. So let's do that story now. Not the Disney version. Kind of the original old man Spirico version. Like the old man older than I am now, old man. That old man. The old man that was born at the end of the 1800s, old man. The way he would tell me the story is, and I'll try to go into his character a little bit for you. I could never be Biff Spirico. I can only be Jack Spirico. But one day there was this grasshopper, and he's hopping through the field, and he's eating his grass, and he's just having a blast. He's not worried about nothing. He's up on top of a grass blade, and he's just munching away on it. By the way, the story was always a little different every time he told it. So I'm doing the best I can, right? And he's eating his grass, and he looks over from his grass. He's up there like it's a tree, and he's
moving around eating. He looks down, he sees this little ant, you know, about, you know, 10% his size, and the ant is carrying food, laboring away, like he's carrying stuff he can barely carry. Be like you picking up the dog, you know, and he's carrying it to his hole. He puts it in the hole in the ground. Then a grasshopper doesn't think nothing. He's sitting out there screwing off, playing his fiddle, farting around, eating more grass, and sees the ant come back out of the hole, and next thing you know, he's going back and with more stuff. And all the ants are doing this, but this one particular ant, he finally yells out to him. He's like, "Hey, ant, what are you doing?" And the ant's like, "Well, it's going to be winter soon, so we're gathering up all of the extra food that's available right now. It's everywhere. We're putting it down in our hole, and when it gets cold, we'll go in the hole until spring." And the grasshopper looks at the ant and says, "You're an idiot. Why are you working so hard? Look, it's beautiful out. You know, there's food everywhere. Just enjoy life." The ant says, "Well, you know what? One day, grasshopper, it's going to get very, very cold very, very fast. And the snow's going to start flying. And your ass is going to freeze." And the grasshopper laughs. And time goes on and fall begins to come and the cool breezes come in and the mornings are kind of cool, but the grasshopper, he's big and fat and happy now, and those cold mornings aren't that big a deal. He crawls up on a grass blade and lays in the morning sun, and he's all fat and happy, and he sees the ant. He goes, "Are you still working?" And the ant says, "Have you done anything, grasshopper?" And the grasshopper, "I don't need to worry about nothing." And then one night, the cold wind came in, and as the cold wind got colder and colder and colder, the grasshopper started freezing his green ass off. Morning came. He waited for the sun. The sun didn't really come up. It was extremely cold. The snow was still blowing, and he remembered his friend, the ant. So he makes his way through the snow to the hole. He finds the hole is closed up. So he raps on the hole door. The ant comes out and goes, "Can I help you with some?" And the grasshopper goes, "I'm really freezing cold. You were right all along. Can I please come in?" And the grasshopper stood there looking, wanting to come in. And the ant said, "Sorry, bud," closed the door, and he froze his ass to death. That's how my grandfather told me that story when I was 4, 5, 6 years old. Some version thereof, many different versions of it that he would use, things he would embellish. But that was how I heard that story as a little kid. I mean, a little kid. Did I get traumatized by it? Did I wake up in the middle of the night and go, "Oh my God, poor grasshopper"? Did I need Disney to redo it? You know, no, I didn't need any of that. The softer story they told kids even back then was, so the grasshopper, the ant let him in and he fed him. And he took care of them, and he let them out in the spring, and then the grasshopper learned his lesson. That just defeats the story. That's not how my granddad told me that story. My grandfather also occasionally said something like this: "What probably really happened is the ants jumped on the grasshopper, bit his ass, killed him, chopped him up in pieces, and took him in his hole, and they ate him. Because that's what ants do. They eat grasshoppers." That was the other alternate version. If there was an alternate version, that was the alternate version I got. And it's true. You know, ants are badasses. Ants are little demons. Do you know what the Latin word for ant is? Formica. Formica. No, not the thing like plastic stuff that they make countertops out of or whatever. Formica. As in formic acid. Did you know that? A little biology lesson before we go on. So ants actually produce formic acid. That's why it hurts so much when they sting you. See, the ant bites you with its little jaws, and it has a stinger like a bee. It's in the same family as bees and wasps, and it stings you and bites you at the same time. But then it pisses formic acid into the wound. That's the itchy, burny part. That's the swell up part that doesn't go away. If it wasn't for that, right, then that would not be a problem. It would just be like being poked. It wouldn't be like an hour later, it'd be like it never happened. They're not that big. Ants are vicious. And the world is a vicious place. And you have been lulled into a belief that the world should not be a vicious place. You have been taught, as I said yesterday, the role of the government is to keep you safe. The government doesn't give a shit about keeping you safe. The government cares about keeping you passive enough that you don't rebel. The government wants its citizens passive enough and fed enough that politicians and bureaucrats don't hang from lampposts. That's their goal. More than anything else, maintain power. And that is the only reason they even care about that. It's how you maintain power. It's one of the boxes that must be ticked or you will end up like Benito Mussolini hanging upside down with a lady spitting on you. That's the truth. So it's up to us to see to our own needs. So the first thing you need to do, if you've just kind of woken up to the like this reality, the world is actually a nasty, hard place that will kill you if you do not, you know, see to your own needs on some levels, is stay calm. Assess your current situation and stay calm. When I first started this show, you got to think about the time frame, 2008, 2009. We were coming up on a 2012. All the hypesters selling all kinds of shit made all kinds of hype over that. Alex Jones was going full Alex Jones back then. Oh, they're going to put you in a FEMA camp, right? You know, and I had all these people finding a show because I'm a marketer and I knew if I called it Lifestyle Design with Jack Spierko, nobody would listen. Coming here completely freaked out, just terrified. What do I do? What do you do? What do you mean, what do I do? What do you do? What's your job? How much income do you have? Where do you live? What's your life like? And they would tell you, and you're like, okay, I'll just put some things in order, and you'll be all right. But it all starts with figuring out where you are. That way you can figure out where you need to get to. From a preparedness standpoint, from a lifestyle, there's all of it. It's always, you must figure out where you are. Where is your genesis starting today? Not where were you when you were 4 years old, crap in your pants. Where are you now? Where do you want to go? This is your new, every day is a new genesis of the rest of your life, right? And so you had to figure that out. It's like, I've talked about this before, but if I drop you off somewhere in the middle of the country and hand you a map and say, all you got to do is here's cars, here's key to a car, here's a car, here's a gas car with enough, you know, with 2,000 bucks on it, here's 500 bucks in cash so you can feed yourself. All you got to do is get from where you are to Dallas. It's easy. And here's a map. But what do you have to do first if I don't tell you where you are? You have to find out where you are. You have to start randomly driving around, and eventually you're going to see a sign. And you'll see something like, you know, Topeka Tire and Gas or something. I'm in Topeka. Is it Kansas? It's awful flat. I see a lot of corn. Maybe once you figure that out, you can get on the map and say, all right, here's how I get to Dallas. And you could be there in a day, day and a half tops. If it's Kansas, could be Topeka, Alaska, if there is such a thing, and you got a little bit more challenge on you. But that's what you have to figure out. Where are you? Where do you want to be? And that's the first step, is no panic prepping. Panic prepping is bad. Panic prepping leads to bad decisions. Panic prepping leads to garages full of MREs and angry wives that end in divorce. Panic prepping is the guy, he has all the guns, all the ammo, and he can't survive being laid off for 30 days. That is not prepared. The next step is journal your spending and your eating. You think you know where you are, but you don't. You want to lose weight? I guarantee you most people would lose weight just from the journaling their food. That's not why we're doing it. It's a positive byproduct of journaling your food. We're journaling our food because this is going to tell us what we need to store, because we're going to get to that in a bit. We should not be storing shit we're not going to eat, at least not at first. We're going to break our food stores into two categories today, high rotation and low rotation, or short-term and long-term. And all we need to get to out of all of this over, let's say, a year or two is 60 days. That's it. We don't have to be ready to rebuild the earth and repopulate it after a nuclear war to have basic preparedness taken care of. Because most people that want to hear that aren't going to do it anyway. Or they're going to do it and they're going to destroy their life as they do it because they're going to be completely irrational in that step. If you're going to get to a year, you got to get to 30 days and 60 days first. You're not going to do it in one go anyway. So let's break that down to that. But we're going to start out by journaling our spending and our eating. Because to put our financial lives together, and to put our lives together from a standpoint of preparedness, again, we need to know where we are. This is a variation on determining where we are. And so most people really don't know what they eat or how much they eat. And that's why I say you'll probably lose weight from this alone In fact, I could probably build a diet plan on it. You just have to write down everything you eat every day and read it twice. Because if you do that, you're going to be like, holy shit, I eat a lot of crap. But when you're eating, you know, once you decide, like, I'm going to keep eating this, or I'm going to add this or take this away, and you got this core list, you know, do that for 30 days. Do it for 60 days. And every time you buy something that you know will store well, won't, like whether it's in, I don't care if it's in the freezer, right? But you use it consistently. You buy it every week or every 2 weeks in the store, put a star next to it. Keep putting stars next to it. Eventually, say 2 months into it, you're going to have this list of things with the, and make a list of all the things with the most stars. That's what to stock up on. That's what to start copy canning with, even if it's not in a can. Copy canning, though, is like, you know, if you buy a can of canned coffee, right? It doesn't matter what it is. But if you did that for some dumb reason and you use that one a day or one a week or whatever, the next time you go to the store, instead of buying one to replace the one you just used, you buy two. The next time you go to the store, you buy two again. The next time you go to the store, you buy two again. You keep doing it until you have a 30-day supply of that item. Then you go back to buying one. You're fronting merchandise like in a store. Or you're fronting your freezer like in the freezer of a store. The new one comes in, it goes in the back. That way you're using the oldest one. You're automatically rotating your food. And all you're trying to do, and this is the thing, most of you could survive in your home without leaving for 2 weeks without starving to death already. All I'm suggesting is extend that to a full month and be more happy about it. Don't be like, shit, now we got to eat this stuff we were never going to eat. Right? It's a good idea to get rid of that stuff. Make room for the stuff you really do eat. That's why we're journaling. We're also going to journal our spending to get a control on our spending habits and figure out where our money is really going. And this is everything. This is you went into the gas station to pay for your gas and you bought a bag of beef jerky. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying it goes on a list. It goes on two lists, really. That goes on food and spending. Yeah? Every dollar you spend on everything you spend on, write it down in your journal for 60 days and then look at it. So all you got to do is just look at both of those lists. They will give you a very clear path forward. I actually don't have to tell you what to do. I'm going to, but I don't really have to tell you what to do after you do this. It will become extremely obvious. I find that the spending journal is way more effective for most people than telling them to make a budget. Most people refuse to make a budget because they don't want to look at it. But if you say all you got to do is get a notebook, get a little black and white, you know, college ruled notebooks that sell for like probably $3 now. They used to be like 50 cents. And just start making a list. That's all you got to do. Open it to the center. From the center, make your food list. From the front, make your spending list. Put a little post-it in there to mark where you can open it right up to it. Just make those lists. Keep them running. Keep reading them. Keep paying attention to them. They will give you the direction that you need to go. They'll tell you where you're spending stupid money. They'll tell you where you're spending smart money. And you'll end up budgeting on your own sooner or later. Because I'm telling you, a lot of people, and T. River is asking me, do I have an example? Bro, I just gave it to you. There's no formula. You write down, today, October 21, $69 on gas, $2 on beef jerky, that's it. There's no formula. There's no format. That's how simple this is. And then when you go to the office and you get crap out of the vending machine, you write down that you bought peanut butter crackers. And how much? And then you also write down how much you spent on, because it's a food item, right? Whatever you spend money on, write it down. Whatever you eat, write it down. That's it. The date and what it was. And you put the time if it makes you feel good. Maybe you'll figure out when you need to take a shit. I don't know. All this is, Nick's got it right. Any format, as long as you understand it and it's easy and it's something you'll keep doing. I don't care if you do it on a spreadsheet or an app or whatever, but I find the problem with those things is it doesn't get done like a book does. There's very few places that I really still prefer paper hard copy to digital. Very few. This is one of them. But you do it however you want to. Next, write a plan for debt elimination and begin creating an emergency fund. An emergency fund is, oh shit, I drove over a piece of angle iron and a new tire is $250 and not pulling out the Visa. I don't even care if you use the Visa because you're at, you know, and you need to get it done now. That means the money was there to cover it. That's your emergency fund. At least $1,000. That's an old school number though. Today, an emergency fund needs to be more in the range of $2,500. Inflation. Thank you, Mr. Government, right? Debt elimination is about determining what you need to get rid of. And as much as I dislike a lot of Dave Ramsey's advice on investing because it's dog shit and it makes people poor, his advice on debt elimination is, by the way, his real estate advice is dog shit too. Paid for real estate is a terrible investment as an investor. Paid for primary residence, sure, that's fine. But if you're going to be an investor in real estate, the last thing you want is paid for real estate. I'm not going to get into it today. But when it comes to debt elimination, a man has a cold. It's a very simple thing. We take the smallest debt that we have, and we take all the extra money we can get, which is why we did a spending journal to figure out, I don't need to buy fucking peanut butter crackers every day at work or whatever it is for you. I don't need to do this. I can, you know, if you have a bad habit like smoking, I'm going to cut it by 2 packs a week instead of just quitting it like an adult because I know it's killing me for no gain. And then that's $10, right? And whatever you can come up with, you apply it to that smallest debt. And then you take the total amount you were spending every month on that smallest debt and you move it to the next debt up. And you do it again. You don't give a fuck about how long the payment terms are. You don't care about the interest rate. Smallest to largest up the hill. That's the debt snowball, right? The snowball thing, the snowball rolls down the hill, and the more it rolls, the more it picks up, the bigger it gets, and the faster it goes. It works the same way uphill with debt. When I have three big debts, right? I have a small debt, a medium debt, and a big debt. What'll end up happening, I'll take a long time to pay off the small debt, and it'll take a little less time to pay off the middle debt, which doesn't seem to make sense. But then the final debt, when those two debts and all of the extra gets combined and goes against it, it'll obliterate it really, really quick. Really quick. And most people that do this get out completely out of debt, no matter how. I mean, people with six figures in debt get out of debt in 5 years who do this. It's a weird thing. But it happens because once you get a taste for it, you start wanting it more and more and more. Once you see the light, you start craving freedom. You got to eliminate. And this is not all debt is evil. That is not who Jack Spirico is. I have a 2.9% interest rate on my house. I have enough money right now to write a check and not have a house payment. My house payment really isn't that big, though, if I take out the stuff I'd still be paying. You know, like insurance, because I'm not going to not insure my home, and taxes, right? The money is more valuable to me working and accumulating interest and returns than it is in my house. I can make more than 2.9% interest on my money. So why would I take money that's making me money to pay down a low interest loan? So I'm not saying all that. I'm talking about all your consumer debt, your student loan debt, your credit card debt, your car debt, all that shit. You hammer it and you pay it off as quickly as possible. Then put together a basic documentation package. This is all kinds of stuff that I won't go into today. I've done multiple episodes on it in today's show notes. And if you're watching the video, there's a link down in the video notes that'll take you over to the audio side where all the links and all the resources are. And there's a link there for point five, put together a basic documentation package that says episode on this. But to give you a basic overview, this is things like all of your contacts, because your phone could get blown up one way or another, driven over by a car, lost. You could be somewhere where it doesn't work. You know, somebody could take it away from you. Who knows, right? This is things like bank accounts, which I won't get into how to protect that information, but I explain it in the episode. This is things like contractors who would do things like remove trees from your driveway. In the event of a big storm. That's just one example. Again, I go deeper into it. I'll do it myself. Not if the tree falls through your roof and breaks your arm. Not if you're away from home on your trip with the boys to the coast and it happens when you're not there and your wife is by herself. Okay, there's a lot of things. So whatever you might need, any vendor who would do that, any contractor who would do that, you need multiples for each thing. Well, you can't get them. No, you can't get them because you don't have a list. Somebody gets those people to come help them, yeah, because they're the first one to call them. They already knew who to call. And, you know, using some of these people to do some work for you when you need it, but you don't have to have it immediately is a good way to be high on their priority list when it comes time. And that way, as soon as the smoke clears, before anybody else is doing it, you're the first one in line. Same thing with hotels. You should have different hotels in different directions away from you. Let's say four different routes out of where you live, 50, 100 miles out. You have the hotel, their pet policy, all the shit you need to know to select them before you're looking. Their numbers, contact information, et cetera, in that book. The second you need them, you can't get a hotel room. Again, no, you can't get a hotel room. How come you can't get a hotel room? Everybody already has one. Who were those? They were the people that moved first. It's all types of things like that. And this book needs to be multiple copies. They all need to be uniform like the military. So that book, you have the same book in your car and your truck. And if you have a teenage kid with a car, they have the same book. And whenever you update it or change something, you take all the books, you bring them home, and you print out your updates, you punch holes in them, you stick them back in three-ring binder and put them back where they go. That way, if something happens and your 17-year-old daughter is freaking the fuck out, "Daddy, I don't know what to do," go under the passenger seat, get the book out, turn it to page 3. Okay, you see the map there on page 3. You see the route that is marked Route A. You see the point that says meeting place A on Route A. Go there. The panic level, even if they're still panicked, just cut in half or more, because now the mind has something to engage with and something to do about the panic. Right? I'm not going to go more into it, but you have to have this. And when I first put this episode out on documentation packages and bug out planning, a master sergeant in the United States Marine Corps, I happened to go to an event that he was at. This guy had been in for like 28 years at this point. He told me that was the best he had ever heard anybody explain something like that. He said it was very clear you were in the military yourself, because it was approachable to a civilian, but it covered every base. Build yourself that. And before somebody asks, do it yourself. Don't ask me for a template, because everybody's different here. It's important. All it's important is it's the same in every place you keep a copy of it. There should be one in every vehicle and one at home. And if you have like a vacation property, remote property, something like that, there should be one there. And it wouldn't be, it's cheap, right? Print it out, send it to a relative, create redundancy in all things. This is practically free. It's ink and paper. Some of you can get away with printing it with company supplies at the office. So, yeah, be careful with that. But if you can do it, go ahead. Then you need to assemble a basic BOB. That's a bug out bag for every family member. Not just dad's tactical bag. I'm going to go fight the Wolverines and shit. No, get the fuck out of here. You're not going to do that. If your bug out bag looks like something you would take to war, it's probably more than useless for 99% of the time. If you want to have like a tactical bag, like a go bag, something like that, that's separate. What we're talking about here is the basics. Cheap and fast, especially the first time around. I have an old episode on that link for you as well. This is things like 3 days worth of clothing, basic food, basic medications that you might need, a little flask of some vodka, because it's one, it's, you know, you calm the fuck down. Maybe you calm somebody else the fuck down, but it also is a fire starter. It is an antiseptic. It has multiple uses, a bunch of stuff. But it's basically, could you grab that bag and go live in a gymnasium where they give you a cot to sleep on for 3 days in relative comfort? Backup battery, information, contact information, all the stuff that we talked about for the documentation package, et cetera. But the big thing most people miss is you need one for every member of the family. Now, I've seen the things that people do with the little kids, and the kid has a little toy radio and shit in there. That's fine. And actually, that kid should probably bring that with them, because it will be a comfort. But you should make one for the kid that is proper, that has the change of clothes, the toiletries, all the other stuff. Right? That way, if you got to get up and you got to go, you grab everybody's bag. And then if you can get anything else, you have time to get anything else before you got to go, it's all gravy. But you have that at all times and you're ready to go. And this is, I mean, I'm going to go back to the early 1980s here. One night when I'm a kid, I'm sitting at home. I probably got two digits to my age at this point. I'm probably like 10, 11 based on how well I remember this. But I couldn't tell you the year. Knock on the door. Open up, Sheriff's Department. Everybody looks at each other like, holy fuck, my dad's like, what the fuck, you know? Opens the door, the sheriff's all friendly, but kind of in a hurry. He says, we need everybody out of here now. What? Now. There's a chlorine leak at the sewer treatment plant just up the road. You need to get your stuff, and you need to get out of here. And he told us, like, there's a couple different parking lots. People are like, go there. We'll let you know when and if you can come back tonight. We went. We were gone for a couple hours, and we came back. It was no big deal. That's just one example, though. You've seen things happen that cause these types of evacuations, mid and long term. You need to be prepared for it. This is not doomsday preppers, guys. This is being a fucking responsible adult, okay? That's what this is being. The next thing is you need to inventory your pantry over a week or two, right? What I'm talking about here is more than just the food journal. But what's in the pantry? How many packets of this? How many cans of that? And when I say pantry, I mean your freezer, right? I mean all your food storage. I'm just using pantry as a blanket term. And you need to know, like, what is your highest amount of inventory and your lowest amount of inventory over a few weeks, what that looks like. This, along with that food journal, will help you develop that supply of food. It will make it crystal clear. Because if you ask me what to buy, I don't know. I'm not you. I don't eat what you eat. And a lot of you guys don't eat what I eat. There's food I think is garbage. You eat it. So if you're going to eat it, store it if it stores well. In fact, the one thing about garbage food is the more garbage it is, the better it stores. That's one thing I'll give the industrialists, the chemistry people that built the modern food system. It doesn't rot on the shelf very quickly. That does have it going for it. You need to figure that out, though. You need to get that inventory in. How much food do you have at your low point is your most important data point in that, though. Because that will tell you what your real risk is. Because here's the funny thing about disasters and emergencies. I don't know if anybody ever told you this. You don't get to freaking decide when one happens. Like, you're going along and boom, there it is. Like, it's like the thing, like, if snails are so slow, then why don't we ever see them coming? You're just like going along and then snail, right? Like, that's, disasters are like that. Super slow moving, but when they're there, they just show up. So you knowing when you're at a low point in your food supply, if that would basically, when you work out the math, you're like, that's 4 days worth of food. Wrong answer. You want that low period, the low period, to be your 30-day food supply. So, you know, you probably, if you're a weekly shopper, that means you're at your peak. You're probably at something more like 5.3 weeks. I don't know if you know this. There's not 4 weeks in a month. That would be 28 days. 4.34 weeks to a month. If you're an accountant, you know this. I wasn't really an accountant, but I studied accounting. 4.34 weeks to a month. So you're looking at like 5.3 weeks worth of food at your high tide line if you're a weekly shopper. If you shop every 2 weeks, right, then you need to be at it like 6.3, 6.4 with that. Once you have that, then you know that at any point, snail, right? When a snail shows up looking at you with his little eyes on his antennas over the thing, and there he is, and he's actually the emergency, you'll have at least a month's worth of food. Pretty simple math. I don't make the rules. I'm just telling you what they are, you know? And then you need to begin to assemble an additional 30 days of long-term storable food. This could be anything from beans and rice to freeze-dried pork chops in a Mountain House can. I'm not going to tell you what to store. You can do it very low cost. You could do it kind of mid-cost. You can do it high-end. If you're a carnivore and you're kind of committed to that, it's going to take more money. But there's things like canned butter, canned cheese. Again, freeze-dried, full-on protein. It costs a lot more money. The thing is, it takes a lot less space to have the same amount of nutrient density. But I still have, like, freeze-dried Gulf shrimp, freeze-dried pork chops and things like that that I bought years ago. Like, about the time I started doing this type of show at the beginning, like, in the very beginning. That long. And it's still good. And I'll be dead and somebody will probably throw it away instead of eating it, but they could. But that's that super long-term store. That's the adjunct. When we put those two together, now we have, I can feed the family for 60 days if I have to. With no inputs. Now I'm in good shape because there's some other things we're going to do that are going to extend that even further. Way back when I was building this show, there was a lot of prepper blogs at the time. They seem to have fallen away as podcasting has become the dominant source of alternative media, but there was a lot more writers back then. I have no idea who this guy was or what his blog was called now, but he wrote like a redneck talks, right? Like, see, if you can do this, then you can get that. See what I mean? Like, that's how he wrote. And he was like, if you have food, finding more food is easy, you see? And I said, in spite of the fact this guy writes like a clown, he's right. If I know I can feed my family for the next 60 days, I got 60 days to find another 30 days I can feed them. And it's going to be pretty easy to pull off. If I am afraid that my kid is going to go hungry tomorrow, it gets really hard. That was the other side of this guy's blog post, right? It gets really hard to figure out how to solve the problem of feeding my kid. That buffer is huge. That buffer is a huge thing for you. So we want to get that long-term storage in there as well. Then we're going to determine, this is part of the documentation package, but I wanted to break it out individually for you today because some of y'all are knuckleheads and will never make a full-on documentation package. But you need to make a plan for multiple places you would go if you had to leave and go at least 50 miles from your home. Ah, Jack, I got it down, man. Me and my brother-in-law, he lives about 100 miles away, and I'll go there or he'll come here. That's one. I said four. Good boy. You got 25%. That's an F. You fail. In fact, when I was a kid, we got weighted Fs. That would be a fucking F3, the worst F, right? The one, if you have two-part course, you got an F3 and an A, you still failed the whole course, right? That's an F3. You only got 25%. Four. Because you don't know where the problem's going to be. You don't know that that's going to be far enough. You just don't know. There's too many things that can go wrong. So you need to have at least four places that you can go that are all at least 50 miles from your house. They do not all need to be bug out locations. They do not all need to be long-term capable. They can be a hotel. They can be a campground. They can be your brother-in-law's. You know, if you have a big family and you're not all close together, then you can have multiple redundancies of kind of like, I'll come here, you'll go there. But when you do that, you also need to think about what you're bringing to the party, what you're bringing with you. You know, if I owned an RV, but I am with Ron White, that RV means ruins vacations. But if I owned an RV, I would take my RV because then at least I have a place that I can get out of their hair and keep them out of mine. I don't like cohabitating with people long periods of time, especially when there's family involved. And I don't just mean you're related. I mean, like, if it's just me, and I have like I don't care if it's a closet for a bedroom, I can get away. But if it's like me and my wife, now there's multiple moving parts. And then when we were young, if it would have been me and my wife and my kid when he was like 12, living in somebody else's home that's also man, woman, and kids, that can get old really fast. You start wanting to knife each other, even if it's with butter knives. And it's good that they're butter knives because they hurt more. Right. So we want to make sure that we can avoid, we want to have as much autonomy, even with those exchanges, as possible. And realize that, yes, in most scenarios, the need will be relatively short term. You know, you're not going to move in with your cousin-in-law for the next 10 years, hopefully, you know. But you need multiple places and just a plan how you would get there. And then you also need to be thinking about if you've got elderly parents, what would you do for them? And in two different ways, maybe three different ways. Way one, there is a disaster that requires, you know, evacuation, and you have to evacuate, and so do they. That's the one everybody kind of like snaps to. Like, if I have to evacuate and mom lives like 3 miles down the road, she probably has to evacuate too, and we got to take her with us. It's a problem, but it's also pretty doable if you have the space. If you have another seat for an ass, you can make that happen. Now, if it's mom and dad and they both need help and neither one of them are really able to just take care of themselves anymore, you might need two seats for asses. But in the same scenario, you're there, they're there, you got to get them out. Okay, yeah. All right, how about this? Your parents are dependent on you for certain things and you have to evacuate but they don't, and you can't go where they are, and now you're not there to take care of those things for them. Maybe it's something like it's a once a week thing where you or maybe it's like you just take care of certain things for them that you don't even need to be geographically there to do, but you won't be able to do when you're dealing with a catastrophe. That's another one. But here's the one that's the most difficult to plan for. You're here, they're there, they're significantly apart from you. They can't get to you and they have to evacuate. Well, I'll go get them. You better have a plan. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, do you have a plan for that? What does that look like? Have you even thought about that? Or did you just pull that out of your ass because I pointed it out and you had never even thought about it before? You have to have plans. Now, no plan will ever survive contact with the enemy. That's an old military thing, and it's true, but you're better off with a plan than no plan. You have a plan, and then you have backup plans and redundancies built into the plan. Think through the plan. What could go wrong? If A, then B. If B, then C. Be that detailed. By the way, that's all free. That's sitting down with that same notebook, figuring it out, working it out, documenting it, including in your documentation package, because that way, if you are taken out some way, whether permanently or temporarily, other people can pick up the plan and run with it. It's called an SOP, Standard Operating Procedure. This week in the AI course, we're teaching students to do exactly that for their business. I'm just suggesting you do it for your life. Oh, by the way, when I put all this together, AI didn't exist. I bet it could help you with a lot of those templates and things like that that you say you want, if that's really what you need. Because many times, I want a template. You give a template, they don't fill it out. It's toolbox fallacy shit. There ain't nothing I've given you to do today you can't do so far. It's just whether you're willing to do it or not. Are you willing to invest in it, or is it more important to doom scroll on Instagram? It's up to you. But make plans for your elderly parents or other family members that may need your assistance in some way. That, you know, maybe you are the rock that they lean on, and that rock could go away. So that includes things like, well, what if you die? Because tomorrow you could get run over by a gravel truck. What if you end up in the hospital long term? Who depends on you beyond your immediate family? Think about their needs and what you would do. What's the redundancy there? It's easier to come up with a plan when everything's good than after shit hits the fan. Just, that's all I'm saying. Then update your resume and be prepared to lose your job on any given day, or start a business or a side hustle or both. But if you are employed, if you're employed, once a year minimum, go over your resume and update it. Be prepared to start a job search in 5 seconds. Like if you got a phone call, hi, T River Rat, this is your boss. You're fucking fired. Goodbye, click. You should already know what y'all should know, like the first five companies you're going to apply to and what the process that's most likely to get you hired as quick as possible is to those five companies. And that may be more than just a resume, but your resume, your CV, your LinkedIn profile, right? Any kind of portfolio that you have that's public for viewing, your references. You know, if you have somebody think, well, if I needed a job, I'd tell them to call Jack. You might want to, like, at least send me an email once or twice a year. That's kind of personal, so I remember you, know who the fuck they're talking about. And that when you get that phone call and you're fired, T River Rat, you're fired, right? You're going to use me. You just real quick and say, hey, Jack, man, I'm looking for a job. I'm going to use you. Is that okay? And I haven't not heard from you for 15 years. And now you're asking for that. That'd be bad. You should treat it like you have to go job hunting next week every day. Be prepared. Because then when you get fired, you don't go, oh, you go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to initiate phase one. I'm going to go have a fucking beer on the porch and relax and celebrate a couple weeks of freedom. Especially if you have an emergency fund saved up and good investments and doing all this other stuff. It just becomes a new adventure. I didn't really care. I'm going to go find something else to do. If you haven't put this shit in place and especially if you're like 30, 40 something years old, you got a couple kids. One's in like 11th grade, one's in like 8th grade, and they have all these activities and shit like that, and you have to pay a membership due, and your wife goes to the fucking fitness center, and you have to pay for that. And you're just, now you're cut down to one side's income, and you have to be the spouse that makes like 65, 70% of the income. You got a fucking problem. If you're ready to go, if you're ready to be fired at any minute. This is a funny thing. People that know they have options are better employees than the ones that don't think they have options. People that are cautious, ass-kissing, yes, man, not just that in itself can be a problem, because that can actually get people promoted in the right scenario, but they're too cautious with everything they do. They never become rock star employees. They never become the employee that when they start thinking about firing people, like, fuck, we don't want to fire Texas River Rat. That's going to fuck some shit up. No. I'll fire two people instead of him. That's the person that knows they can go somewhere else is the person they don't ever want to go somewhere else. It also helps you negotiate your salary for those annual raises and what have you. Or, like I said, start a business or a side hustle. Because if you have a business that's making you half your income at work, that's a really great position to be in, and you should be stockpiling the fuck out of money out of that business. All that money should be going in a stockpile or back into the business to make it bigger as quickly as possible. But if you're in that mode and you've stockpiled some money and you had 1.5 times your income, but you were only using one time your income for all your things, including your savings and investments, and this was just all stockpile and reinvestment money, yeah? And you lose your job, you just say, you know what, let's ship this motherfucker into fifth gear and put the freaking hammer down and build this business up now. If you've been dicking around with it and you hadn't been doing that, it doesn't really make any money, you just need another job, son. So think about that's not for everybody. What is your plan if you lose your job tomorrow? Because as true as this was when I did this show the first time in 2009, it is more true today. There's not just five dudes looking to take your job. There's five AI bots looking to take your job. Now, I know if you're a pipe fitter or an electrician, AI is not coming, but some young, hungry apprentices. Just know that. Anybody anywhere can lose their job. If federal employees got their asses fired last week by Donald Trump, they thought they were going to be employed till they were 100 years old if they wanted to be. If it can happen to them, it can happen to you. Have a plan and be ready to go immediately. Right? Next, this is one of the most important things that I've taught over the years. Avoid, like the plague, focusing on any one specific disaster that can occur. It's going to be a coronal mass ejection from the sun. You know, it's going to be a tornado. It's going to be an earthquake. You don't know what it's going to be. You need to focus on systems of support not being there. The reason that you are in a disaster is nowhere near as important as the fact that you're in one. And there's something called disaster commonality we'll get to in a bit. You need to focus on your own redundancy. It doesn't matter why. We'll get to why in a minute because there are some fine tuning. But stage one is I don't have money. I can't live in my house. I have no electricity. Just those types of things. Being ready for all the things that you rely on that you can lose. Yeah, that's it. That mindset is so important. It's also probably a good idea to plant a garden. Start planting if you can, depending on the season. But when I say plant a garden, I don't really mean a garden. That's just one potential. Have some form of alternative food production. Know a place that you can go catch fish, that you can reliably catch fish, that are fish that you will actually eat and feed yourself one meal or a month or two meals a month or one meal a week from that source. Start doing it now. I would say that's as good as a garden for a lot of people, right? Because, no, it won't help you if the zombies come, but it will help you if you lose your job. You'll have more free time, go fishing more, eat more fish. You'll save more money. I had friends when I was in school in Florida, as a little kid, they ate fish like three nights a week. And, I mean, it was real common in Florida for poor, and these were poorer people. They ate fish and grits. That was a big dinner. You know, not big dinner is like woohoo, but just like a very common thing. And I didn't know at first when my mom would tell me about them, that's what they were having again. But most of the time it was fish the oldest boy or the father caught. And that's why they were actually doing it, because the grits were cheap and the fish were free. And they happened to live in a place that they could walk down and fish. If it worked then, it'll work today. There's a lot more. We can find a lot more places to fish today. There's a lot more places. It's easier to find them thanks to things like Google Maps. I've done whole shows on that as well, like how to find places to fish. In fact, I did one where I literally showed places I was going to check out. I think I showed three of them around my house, and two of them worked out to where we caught fish. It's an option. A stack of quail cages in your garage would fill this role. A hydroponic system in your house that grows you basic leaf green vegetables and herbs would fill something. Knowing where and when to forage in your area for mushrooms or tree nuts or whatever, berries, etc. Something. Hunting. Some form of food production that doesn't involve a grocery store. That you have control over, whether it's a natural system or a system that you build. Both of those are okay. Next, learn about disaster commonality. This is where I talked about don't prepare for the event. And what I mean by commonality, it's about the loss of those support systems. Go look at like 10 potential disasters, no matter what they are, except like nuclear war. Like, let's not go to the extreme where we're all dead anyway. I'll tell you, there is some fatalism in my philosophy, and it comes from my grandfather on my mother's side. He was an Army intelligence officer, so he knew more than the average person knew during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And he and my grandmother and their kids, I think my mom was probably a tiny itty baby at this point, they were stationed in Lebanon. And they had this house that was rented for them by the government, by our government. And they had like these flat rooftops, had a flat rooftop deck. And at the peak of the Cuban Missile Crisis, my grandfather told my grandmother how close we really were and that it could be that night. They put the kids to bed. They got two bottles of Lebanese rose wine, some bread and cheese. Took two chairs, went up on the roof deck, made a little table out of a cable reel, put it between the two chairs, held hands, drank wine, and ate cheese, and watched the sky. And figured if it's going to go, nothing's going to save us anyway. Nothing happened. Everything, the Russians backed down, and they went on. I'm not saying to be that passive, but there wasn't much else for them to do at that point. There was no place for them to go. They're in Lebanon in the 60s. Early 60s, right? Kennedy is president. Yeah. There wasn't nothing else to do. There is a place for some of that in this planning, at least initially, because you're not ready for anything. So take the disasters like a job loss, a diagnosis of a serious or terminal illness in your family, a tornado ripping the roof off your home, and just, you know, make a list of like 10 things that can go wrong. Not to freak out. Then just go all the things that you would need in those situations. Look for the ones that are straight across. They're all the same. Whatever those needs are, that's what you need to focus on. That's commonality of disaster. Now, whenever I used to talk about commonality of disaster, then when people would talk about, you know, but if this thing happens, it's a much bigger deal. Yeah, but there's this correlation to that, and that is disaster probability. So that's impact scale. We're not going to get into today. We're talking about probability. Probability means what is the likelihood that you'll experience the disaster in your life? And that is a very strange phenomenon because everybody wants to focus on the ones that affect everybody, like the scandemic, which didn't exist yet back then. I used to always say, has anybody ever seen a global pandemic? And nobody's hand went up when I did talks. Now everybody's hand would go up, and I go, but did you really? Did you really? Or did you see the government react the way that it did because it knew it could get away with it? It's a different global disaster, actually. Tyrannical government. You've now lived through it. You've now seen it. In some places, it kind of never really went away. It advanced and never backed off because there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. But the reality is you will probably experience not one global, you know, one personal disaster in your life. You'll probably experience many of them. The less number of people affected by any individual disaster, the more likely the disaster is to occur to any individual in question. So the order of probability of disaster for you to experience it is personal, localized, regional, state, national, global, in that order, with the highest probability being personal. You'll say, I don't know about that, man. You ever get fired from a job? Yep, there's one. You ever get really bad news from the doctor about somebody in your immediate family? Yep, there's two. You ever get fired more than once? Well, yeah, there's three. Wife ever get fired? Yep, there's four. See what I'm saying? And once when a tornado rips through a place, it's usually kind of a neighborhood to regional level disaster. I've seen tornadoes rip through a place, and this house is to the foundation. The next house doesn't have a roof, and the third house has a shingle missing, and the fourth house is down to the foundation. That kind of shit happens all the time. It's kind of isolated pockets, even in what looks more broad scale. Big giant tornadoes generally are more regional, but they're certainly not national. All the terrible shit that happened in the recent years in Florida, the Carolinas, et cetera, didn't do anything to a person in Texas, let alone a person in Oklahoma or Pennsylvania or Ohio. When we had the big disaster in Palestine with the exploding train and they blew it up on purpose, that didn't affect anybody within 100 miles or more away in any way, shape, or form, other than you were mad at your television set and politicians, which is pretty much a constant. Those are regional. So there's a high degree of probability you will have a personal, local, or regional disaster in the near future. Those are where to focus your attention first. I'm worried about the big ones. Great. Let's learn to hold our head up. Then we can learn to crawl. Then we can learn to pull ourselves up with a chair. Then we can learn to walk. Then we can learn to sort of run and fall down. And then we can learn to sprint. And then we can learn to marathon run. There's a progression to it. It's the exact same way I teach everything. I want to make $1 million. Have you ever made a dollar? Will I get paid at work? No, not an employee money. Have you ever made a dollar, an actual dollar or profit in a business? No. Okay, shut up. Let's make a dollar. Now let's make 100. Now let's make 200. Now let's make 400. Now let's see how it works. You got to get to the, I don't care how quick, you're always going to get a step at a time first. How do we make that first dollar? It used to be a real common thing too. I haven't seen this in a long time. I remember being a kid though, even into my teens and early 20s, you go into a business, been around a while, especially like a locally owned business, you know, like a feed store or maybe a bar or, you know, a little restaurant, diner, or a little hotel or something. There'd be a frame on the wall. There'd be a crusty old looking dollar bill in it. The first dollar the business ever made. That's a little tradition. I think maybe we need to bring that one back. I like that tradition. I forgot all about that. Next, you also do need to determine your most probable personal, local, regional disasters. I just said not to focus on it. I did, because that's your base. But then there is fine-tuning, and here's what I mean by that. I am not worried about a major earthquake hitting Fort Worth, Texas. Could we have a little tremor? Sure. Is there some earthquakes because of all the shit they're doing out in the basin out there with fracking and shit that really shouldn't be doing earthquake stuff? Yeah. Is it going to make my house fall on my head? No. If I lived in San Francisco, I'd feel a little bit different now, wouldn't I? You know what else I'm not worried about? Volcano. I'm not worried about a volcano. If the Yellowstone goes off, that's not regional, right? If that thing goes off, that's a global fucking disaster, right? That's the apocalypse. We're not there yet. But I'm not worried about a volcano springing up in my backyard. I'm not worried about a hydroplastic cloud. I'm not worried about volcanic ash landing on my roof and then it rains and the building collapses. I'm not worried about any of that. You know why? We don't have volcanoes here. I am worried about tornadoes. I am worried about ice storms. If it happened before, it can and will happen again. That's how we have to look at this, right? This is what we need to be thinking about. What are the things that are most likely to happen? And then here's my baseline preps, and how do I now customize them and tweak them to the reality of where I live? I'm not worried here in Texas about a blizzard that drops 8 foot of snow, and a month later, there's still snow on the ground. As cold as it's gotten here, nothing like that has ever happened here. We're talking like movie level shit for that to happen. When I lived in Arkansas, I was worried about the effects of flooding, but I wasn't worried about me being flooded because I lived on the top of a mountain ridge. If I was flooded, I would have been looking for Noah's Ark 2.0 to come by and get me. So I was worried that the roads below me could be flooded. So it's the same disaster. But if I was the dude that lived down the road from me, I'd have been worried about my house being flooded. Where all I was worried about, will flooding cut me off from access out or access in? That's just another perfect example. I wasn't worried at all about the effects of a hurricane in Arkansas. I worry a tiny little bit about it here. But if I lived in Houston or Jacksonville, Florida, like I did when I was a kid, or Tampa or Sanibel or Miami, I might think a little bit more about that. And if I lived in Miami, I wouldn't give one rat's ass about an ice storm at all. So, you know, it's pretty simple to understand when we break it down like that. Then we need to start window shopping for some country land or an urban homestead. This is useful no matter what. This is useful for so many reasons because it is a useful thing to know what's available and how much it costs. That's all I'm going to say about that, right? It's useful. It's useful to know like what's available and how much it costs. It also helps you from daydreaming to the nonsense. If you're daydreaming about someday moving out, you might as well start looking now. If you ever get to a point where you're ready to do it, you're going to be a much more informed buyer. You see what I'm saying? You're going to have a lot more idea of where to look for, what to expect, how much it's going to cost, the logistics of moving. You're not going to be dazed and confused. Like you and your wife decide, hey, you know, we want to get out of here. Where do we go? I don't know. Never even thought about it before. I want to go to Kentucky. That's a big fucking state, bro. Where? Do you want to live in the mountains? Do you want to live on the plains? Do you want to live on the coast? Do you want to live near a lake or a river? Top of a hill? What kind of there's all kinds. There is no downside to window shopping real estate. And I'd say window shop all kinds of real estate. Other urban rural fringe. Other locations, vacation property. Being informed about real estate has no downside. It doesn't cost any money either. There's a billion sites where you can analyze it. Just an awareness is all I'm talking about. Because as you progress through life, things that you never thought you'd have an opportunity to do, you may find opportunities to do. You could go from, I don't have enough money to even think about leaving and I'm stuck here, to I just had a windfall that I never expected and now I have the ability to find that freedom and you might need to move quickly. That's one option. Another option, you could be in one of those relationships where like your spouse is like, no way, man, we ain't never leaving here. And he or she might turn to you someday and go, you know, I've been thinking about this. I think it's a very useful thing to be informed about the cost of real estate in various locations. It's also one of the reasons that whenever these retards start about, oh, never own a home, it's impossible. Where do you live, man? Where do you live? And when they tell you, I know exactly how to do things, and I'm like, well, here's a house you could afford. Well, I don't like it because I don't give a fuck. There's a house, you could afford it, you could fix it up, it's useful, and no, you won't die. I've checked the crime statistics. So don't tell me you'll never own a house. What you're really saying is you don't want to do the things necessary to have a house. Very, very simple. Do some shopping, window shopping for that. Then think of the children. Won't somebody think of the children? I agree. Start with your own. If you have kids or if there's grandchildren or nieces in your life, think about them. How would these things affect them? And what can you do to mitigate that without being stupid about it? Parents have a very weird kind of bifurcated nonsense. On some levels, they don't think enough about caring for their kids in certain situations, and on others, they overcompensate. It will not hurt your kid if they have to quit baseball for a freaking couple months. They'll be okay. They'll be okay. It won't hurt them if you can't go out and buy them the latest freaking designer clothes or tablet or whatever the fuck ever. They'll be all right. It is not a terrible thing once your kids are, you know, let's say 12 years old and up, that they know we can't do this because we cannot afford to right now. That's a your 5-year-old shouldn't be worried about whether mom and dad can pay the mortgage this month or not, even if there's a chance you won't be able to. That kid is too young to know that shit. That stress should not be on their mind. And 9 times out of 10, your concerns for it are unwarranted, and you'll figure it out. And it's better that they never know about it. But as they get older, it's okay to share a little bit of the burden. In fact, you need to be sharing a little bit of the burden, because your job as a parent, and I keep saying this, to work yourself out of a fucking job. If you are not trying to work yourself out of a job as a parent, you are not doing your job. Now, I know you, I'm going to be their dad or mom forever. I agree. I will be my son's father forever. But he's also 36 effing years old at this point. If I still had to do my job as a dad in that context, I would have been a failure. We call this failure to launch. Your kids, by the time they're in their early 20s, should be able to pay their own freaking bills and survive. If they have to get a roommate or some shit, I did too. That's okay. But they should have the ability to do it. So you need to be working yourself out of a job. And part of that is, as they get older, sharing more of what being an adult looks like. You can't model behavior if your behavior is not seen. It's amazing what kids sometimes, like when they start to learn this, you know, let's say young teens. Oh, you don't just have money? You don't just have money? I remember, like, it was some kid in my family. Well, we'll just get it out of the machine when we needed money. Like, you know, ATM. It was that long ago that it was really common to use ATMs. It wasn't, you know, always just whip out the debit card and pay for shit, which may even be worse. But I think it was my niece, and her thought process was adults just go to this machine and it just gives them money whenever they need it. Which, if you think about it from her viewpoint, it makes sense. You don't know. You never had a job in your life. You're freaking 8 or 9. Every time your parents are like, I got to stop and get some money, and it comes out. There's some point where they have to learn, like that's my money. The bank is holding for me, and I have to go prove I'm me and take it out. And the amount of money in there goes down every time I take it out. It's not really a cash machine, right? It's not a cash card. It's a way to spend the money that I worked for. And we don't have money for everything. And I think parents that have sheltered their kids way overboard for that, you're not preparing them to be an adult. Part of why we have these whiny-ass little snot-nosed bitches when they're 25 years old, they don't know that their parents struggled because their parents hid it from them. So why do you think they're like, this doesn't seem right? My parents had it easy. No, they didn't, you little bitch. But your parents were little bitches in that they never let you see that they struggle. They never let you understand that they stood in front of the meat counter and went, shit, how much? Oh. And so now the 25-year-old's doing that, and they think their parent never did it because they never shared it with them. We're sheltering them. Your job is to shelter them from what they're not old enough to handle. A 15-year-old is old enough to handle, hey, we can't have ribeyes tonight because they're $20 a piece. We're eating chicken because that's what we can afford. No, we're not taking a vacation to Disneyland because we can't afford to go there. I'm going to tell you what, if you grew up in the 80s and the 70s, you heard all the time what you couldn't afford. You heard you couldn't afford things that you could afford. And it wasn't a bad thing, really, was it? Then why'd we turn around and do it to our kids? Probably because we thought we were helping them have a better life than we did. Or did we really? A little parenting advice mocked into this one. And then assess your normal preparations. What's the normal preparation? Your insurance? Preppers don't worry about insurance. Well, then you're not a prepper. You're a dumbass. You know, like if your house burned down, the insurance that your lender told you you had to have, would it really help you or would it help them? And your normal preparations too is like, well, I have insurance. I have X amount on the house and X amount on the property in the house. You know, this is a funny thing. Let's say you had a house, you had $300,000 of insurance on the house and $100,000 of insurance on the property. They don't just send you a check for $400,000. You have to prove that the property was there and worth what you said it was. They're happy to insure it before the disaster. But the proof must be provided after the disaster. So everything of value that you would claim on a loss, you need to have documented. John, I don't know if this is the best place to do it, but it does work, and I guess it's pretty reliable. John Willis from SOE, he has tons of shit. I mean, collectibles and high-dollar stuff and all. Like, his upstairs of his shop, his living area up there is a hall of oddities. It's like a museum. And so every time they get a new piece, they take a picture of it, they note what it is and what it's worth, and they post it to a private Facebook page so it's all there, and no matter where you are, you can access it. Again, other than Facebook, but I am not going to fault him for it because at least he's done it. And I know he's done it because I've brought it up before, and he said, well, this is how we do it. Like that big screen TV, what's it worth? Did you really have one? There's a melted frame, and was it really as new as you said it was? Don't think insurance companies are your friend, because they're not. They're not. So that would be, not only do you have the insurance, but do you have the things that you'll need to act on the insurance? That's one normal prep. Normal preps are, does your car have a spare tire? Well, surely it does. A lot of new cars don't. They give you a plug-in pump to air up your tire. What happens when you run over a piece of angle iron? You can't air the tire up now, can you? It's got a giant hole in it. What happens when you drive over a great big spike? Normal prep would be something like a plug kit to go along with that air pump. And if you don't have a spare tire, get your ass a spare tire. Find a place to store it in your vehicle. Or have some other plan. A normal prep would be something like roadside assistance. So, you know, if you're somewhere, especially where you don't know anybody because you're on the road and your car breaks down, the problem isn't just calling somebody, it's knowing who to call. That's always a problem. I don't know who to call. I'm in Phoenix. I'm not from Phoenix. I don't have any friends in Phoenix. I was driving through Phoenix. My car broke down on the side of the highway. I'm sitting in the third lane. I can't get my ass off the road. I hope somebody comes along and pushes me, but until then, I need to call somebody. Don't think the Phoenix PD will be by real, real soon to help you out because they're too busy fucking with somebody to help you out. You're not a priority. God help you if you're on a back road or something and that happens and you don't even know where you are. Your GPS will tell you where you are. If your phone works, you're not out of signal. You can call somebody, but who? This is just a simple thing. All the basic things that we should all do that we don't even think of as prepper, survivalist stuff. But insurance is probably one of the highest among us. Amazing how people are so concerned about health insurance, but they don't seem to be concerned at all about property insurance. And again, the things necessary so you can execute the claim on the lost property. If you have jewelry insured, take your jewelry to a reputable jeweler and get it appraised. And I don't know if you know this, but this thing I'm holding in my hand right here, this little thing here, this is made out of fucking gold. You know what happens to gold? It goes up in value, which makes the ring itself intrinsically go up in value. As a ring, it's also gold. So every once in a while, especially when there's big changes, go get it reappraised. Keep those appraisals where they can be found, even if the house burns down. Now, when you go to State Farm or whoever, you can say, y'all, I'm insured for $125,000 worth of property. The claim I'm making is $118,000. Here. They'll pay it. Insurance companies, as bad a rap as they get, when you follow their rules, they honor their contract. I ain't talking about health insurance, that's all. They actually do too, but they make it impossible to understand. Property insurance is very straightforward if you do your side of the deal. So make sure all those pragmatic, normal, boring preparations are in place. Last, most important, what you do matters. Take ownership of your plan and your life. You have to do that. If you don't take that step, nothing I say will help you. I don't agree with Jack at 45 minutes and 37 seconds. I don't care. You don't have to agree with everything I said. That's the whole point of this step. You must own this. anything I say you really don't want to do, put it off, defer it, or alter it so it fits what you want. But don't not do all the other things. Because the main reason that people will be like, well, I'm not doing it because he said at 47 minutes and 13 seconds to do a thing that I think is stupid. What about the other 99% of the content? Well, that was good, but you don't want to do it. You don't want to grow up. You don't want to be an adult. You want to be responsible. You don't want to take it. You don't want to do all these things because it's not expensive to do any of this. And the things that actually involve money are generally things like paying down your debt, which you have to do anyway. You don't want to do it because it takes you away from binge watching Netflix or playing video games or whatever the hell else it is, picking your butthole. You don't want to do it because it's growing up, and growing up's not comfortable. Growing up's not comfortable. I'll tell you a real quick story and then we're going to wrap up today. But I'm going to comment on this real quick from Hey Hey, Alabama. He says, I'm told roadside assistance on your insurance will raise your insurance if you have to use it. It won't. No, it won't. It's a separate line item and it's cheap. Don't buy into that. That's dumb. I don't know who told you that. Don't get any more information from that person that told you that because they're wrong. And if they're an insurance agent, don't buy insurance from them because they work for some podunk dumbass company. Like, that is a line item extra on your insurance. But back about 14 years ago when we had the place in Arkansas, but we hadn't moved there yet. My truck broke down about halfway from the road to my house, the dirt road along the way. It's about 3.5 miles from the actual road through private roads to my house. It broke down. And it was transmission out. And so we had AAA. I made a phone call. AAA dude came and got the truck, took it down to the dealership to get it worked on. Tow truck dude was going to give us a ride up to the house, but we had good relations with the neighbors. Neighbor came down, picked us up. Truck went that way. We went to our house. Neighbor said, if you need a vehicle until yours is fixed, you can borrow ours. If that hadn't been the case, we could have rode into town with the tow truck driver and rented a car. And I made a video about it. And I said, this is a prep. And I held up my AAA card. I made a little video. It's still on my channel somewhere. I got slaughtered in the comments for not being a real survivalist. How exactly in that moment would a year's worth of food really help me? Does that make any sense? These people live in fantasy land. Don't be among them. Take ownership of your plan in your life and prepare for the boring things first because they're the things most likely to fuck shit up for you. With that, hope you enjoyed today's show. Let me remind you of a few ways you can help support us. One, you can pick up a copy of my book. If you like this kind of straight talk or you want to share it with others, Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life by me, myself, and I, Jack Spirko, is a book for you or for that person that you care about. It's not expensive. You can order a copy and have it sent right to them. Maybe they'll read it even if they wouldn't listen to a podcast. Also, you can do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is the Olatons T-010 Folding Titanium Scalpel. This is a great little tool. It uses a standard scalpel blade. That means they're very cheap and affordable. When it gets dull, you might touch it up a time or two on a sharpening steel, but you just take it off and throw it away and put a new one on it. It opens one-handed. It's liner lock like a little pocket knife. I also have a larger version of this product on the website. It's a little bit bigger with a larger, longer blade. But, I mean, since I put this one out, I've had a ton of people tell me they've picked it up. And you know who picked this up extensively in this audience as far as like a demographic cohort? People that do rabbits and skin rabbits. I've been told this is one of the best small game skinning tools there is. And as a guy that skinned a lot of squirrels in my lifetime as a kid, I can see exactly what they're talking about. This is one of those great little tools. Again, the whole body is made out of titanium. It's going to last you forever. The disposable part is just the blade. And you can get these for well under $1 a piece in quantity because it's a surgical scalpel blade, which means it's surgically scalpel sharp, but it also means it's mass produced and easy to come by. check these out. Again, you can find them at tspaz.com or use the link down in the video or the episode notes today, and you'll be able to get yourself one of these, or it's Big Brother. And also anything you buy online, if you start your shopping at tspaz, it helps us out no matter what you buy, including like the 500 plus products that I have there that I've personally reviewed and endorsed. If you want to know, like, in any category of stuff, I have a whole listing at tspaz, you know, books, energy, tactical, EDC, all of it. You can look at all the stuff I've reviewed over the years. And if I say it's good, I spent my money on it. I think out of all the products reviewed, there's like one I was given and one I never bought because it was recommended and somebody wanted a recommendation for it. Everything else I paid for with my own money. If I wouldn't buy it, I wouldn't suggest you do it. Or become a member of the MSB. If you become a member of my private membership program, it is not a donation to the broadcasting, the public broadcasting service of Spirico, PBSS. It's not what it is. There are enough discounts in there that it's free to be a member in the end. In fact, it's profitable to be a member. That's the way I designed it. We have discounts on silver and gold. Who the hell has that? Nobody. We do. We have discounts on cannabis products. We have discounts on technology products. We have discounts on tactical products. We have discounts on so many things, I can't even remember them all. I'm telling you that I probably save $400 to $500 a year using the discounts inside the membership that I sell. It's that good. Plus, you'll help support the show at about 18 cents an episode. With that, I appreciate all of you. Thanks for tuning in today. Tomorrow, again, I'll have Hakeem on from Above Agency, maker of the Above phone, the Above tablet, and the Above book. He's a really great guy. He'll tell you about his product lineup, but he'll also tell you a lot of really important things about maintaining your privacy and security in this online world. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with that. Oh, wait, I almost screwed up, didn't I? I do have some starred stuff, and I promised. T River at with a $4.99 super chat said, are you going hunting this year? If not, when was the last time? Last year I went hunting, very briefly. The year before I went hunting successfully. This year I may not. I do have a fishing trip planned the weekend after Thanksgiving, though, to the coast. And I have, in the years, let's say the last 5 years, I've become much more motivated to take trips to fish than to hunt. And I think it's because it's easier, it's more accessible, and I don't have to worry so much about when. There's always a good place to go fishing. There is not always a good place to go hunting. There's seasons and bag limits and weather, and you know, you can almost always find a good place to go fishing, and it's a lot more accessible. And I don't know, I like to hunt. I do. But there's something very spiritual to me, especially with bigger fish on light gear, about that connection between the angler and the fish in that little line. There's something about that that does more for me than any time I put a bullet or an arrow in a deer. I honestly, today, I see hunting more as a way to put meat in the freezer than is a lot of recreation. I enjoy it, don't get me wrong, but not the way I enjoy a fishing trip. You don't have to sit in a tree and be quiet when you're fishing. Second Lot Organic Farm says, comment, I really like that you're going back and redoing old episodes. I think it's such a smart idea. We now get to see the foundations with an extra 18 years of your experience added to them. I hope so. That is part of my goal there. So thank you for that. And then Homesteading Heathen, $10 super chat. Thank you, sir. He said, when you were first talking about this, the advice helped me prioritize and set attainable, realistic goals. I'm debt-free, own a business, and live in the forest. Just so y'all know, Jack is an asshole. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. There's people out there that don't understand the fact that I appreciate being called an asshole, but I do. That's all I got that I managed to see, star, or link up on. I am going to just welcome Humble Mechanic, who popped in here at the end. He says, LOL, I am 100% sure I can fix anything wrong with any car I own. You know where I can't? On the side of the road with no tools or parts. Triple A for the win. Thanks for that, man. I agree. He'll say, we need it. You're a mechanic in the Army. So I worked on freaking 5-ton and above diesel vehicles. I'm not exactly the, you know, I mean, I know what to do, but I'm not exactly the guy you're looking for to work on a Toyota truck or a Dodge Challenger. But again, it doesn't matter. Even if I have some tools, and I always carry tools, but there's not, you need a part. If your freaking fuel pump goes out, you are not duct taping it back together MacGyver style. So thanks for that, Humble. I appreciate it. Again, now I'll sign off for real. Y'all have a great day. I'll catch you tomorrow with another episode.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.